Gentlemen, we forge ahead in Masechet Nedarim, and today's daf is daf Samach Tet, which definitely puts the Sfaradim between us ahead of the game. So, okay, what if we... All right, so what have we been talking about here? You'll recall that the way that we ended up understanding the point of the Mishnah that seems to be talking about a case that we don't even require is that it taught us about the fact that if somebody had been making, either the Baal or the Oros had been making, then he was Shoel on the Hakamah, so then we would still need either, according to the Ran, a in tandem new Hafara of both of them, or according to the Rambam, there's nothing to do. There would be no way to be able to be mevatel this neder after the hakam of the other one. Fine. But the Gemara took for granted that there's a concept of she'ela on hakama. Now, today, we want to look at that assumption a little bit closer because it isn't 100% clear. And the truth is that it actually opens up an entire area of research, which is the hakama itself something which simply allows the neder to be chal, or is the hakama an active part of the neder? So in other words, because of the fact, however we understood it yesterday, where we explored the concept of a bipolar neder, so to speak, in which the neder is on the one hand an expression of a relationship to the father, or it's al dat bala noderet in the case of the Oros, and that over here it's being, she's being torn in different directions. Still, the question is, how exactly do we view the al dat? Do we view the al dat as being, well, I wouldn't want the neder if my husband doesn't want it? Is that basically the idea? Or is it al dat that the da'at is part of what is required for the asiyas haneder? Now, this makes a big, big difference. Because if the idea of a hakama is just accepting the fact that I'm giving up my rights to being mefer. Okay, so then, you gave it up, you gave it up. You said the neder is chal, and that's the end of it. I mean, what would you mean going to a chacham and saying, I shouldn't have said I want the neder, I don't want the neder. This isn't your neder, daddy. We care whether you changed your mind. It's a joke. So it's not so obvious, just on the face of it, that the concept of She'ela and Hafara is correct. If there is such a concept, it changes our entire understanding of the nature of the Bein Av Lebito Ubein Ish Leishto, correct? Because it means that they are an active part of the neder through doing the Hakama. So then the question is there really a difference between the hakama and the default hakama of not being mefer? Because, I mean, not being mefer is certainly not the same as a hakama. That we're going to have to keep our minds open to. And remember that the Torah offered us two different ways of dealing with this thing. If he's mekimla, okay, so then it's done. If he's shaysek, then we have to wait till the end of the day. Then we have a default position that he can no longer be mefer. Fascinating. So what would that mean about the active hafara? Is the active hafara part of the neder process such that it would be possible to even be shoel on a hafara? So that I'm basically, when I am being mefer, what I'm doing is I'm holding the neder off. My das is a positive restraint on the neder. Now, if that's the case, then it would be possible to even contemplate a she'ela on hafara, because both the hafara and the hakama are the active participation of the father in the chalos of the neder, either by making it chal, where over there it's easier to understand why it would be possible to go to a chacham and be she'el on the hakama, but even on the hafara, it might be possible. Why? Because, I mean, like, why would we think such a thing on our own? The truth is, it isn't really on our own. It's because the lashon of the pasuk is, Isha yakimena v'isha yeferena. And therefore, the Torah is making a connection, a hekesh, between the hafara and the hakama. So if we determine that it's obvious that the hakama, I mean, it's not obvious, but that we determine that, to me it's obvious, that the hakama is an active part of the actual neder, and therefore it is possible to be shoyal on the hakama, then the very fact that the Torah puts them together in that way is odd, isn't it? I mean, because the hakama is active, but the hafara just allows the neder to be chal. Oh, apparently, the very fact that the Torah insists on putting them together in that fashion means that both of them are equally a part of the neder, in which case it would be possible to do a she'ela even on a hafara. So now, if that's the case, what it opens up in front of us is a Pandora's box of analysis of the da'as of the father and or Arus or Baal, right? Because we're going to have just as many issues with understanding the intent when it comes to the way that he phrases his hakama or hafara as we will with how the person phrases the actual neder. Because now hakama and hafara are language variations on the dharam. Oh my God. Just when we thought it was safe to go outdoors. And in fact, that's exactly what we're going to be looking at. Is more of the intent of the husband or the father, more about his intent in the phraseology of the hakama and hafara, assuming that the two really are related. So let's take it step by step. My first question is, boy, Rava, we were holding in the middle of the daf over here, which brings us five lines down from the top. It's a short daf. Boy, Rava, yesh she'ela behekem or ein she'ela behekem? So my first question is it really possible to look at the hakama as being active to the neder, and therefore it would be possible to be shoyal on a hakama in the same way that you can be shoyal on a neder directly? And if it is, the imtim tzolomer yeshela behekem. Now, of course, remember, we had already assumed in our explanation of the Mishnah that, yes, for sure, yeshela behekem, because that's how we explained the fact that the Mishnah needed to mention the extra case because it was talking about where he had been shoyal on that game. So, okay, but I mean, that is because in the end, perhaps that's the way it was understood there. But Rava just wants to know theoretically, let's deal with the issue. If it is possible, how do we understand the hafara? Because that is a big extension to say that if the Torah was matir a she'ela on hakama, it would allow you also to be shoyal and to cancel your hafara by no means follows, right? Because the hafara can clearly be understood as something that simply cancels the other neder. So wait a minute, how do you cancel a cancellation? I mean, like, it's very weird. So if you're going to tell me that the hafara, that since the Torah makes a hekesh between hakama and hafara, so therefore it must mean that the cancellation is an active presence of the father's undoing the neder, so then it would be possible on some level to be shoyal on it. Now remember that we've already seen yesterday that the death of the person who does the hafara cancels the hafara. Now, that's interesting, because that definitely seems to mean that it's something about the active presence of the mind that keeps the neder back, that is necessary in order for neder to keep back. So in other words, what we see over here is a general tendency in the direction of viewing the hafara as an active presence, and that only after it's able to act and permanently cancel that, and as I said before, that the laboratory for the investigation of a lot of these issues is specifically Nara Hamu'urasa, because it's over there that we can have a hafara that does not really stand on its own, because it needs the other one's hafara. That's where we can actively investigate what would be the din if we stop a reaction in the middle, so to speak, and we film what happens with the molecule as it's forming. So what happens over here with hafara as it's getting together with the other hafara, but before it's managed to cancel the neder? So that's where and that's the only case where we would be able to be shoyal, perhaps. It's not clear. Can you be shale at any time, even if you're the only one, and then reinstitute the netter? If it's still on the day, obviously it would have to be on the same day. Because if the day passes, then we have, this is interesting. Then we have the default situation in which the netter goes into effect without taking you into consideration. So it turns out that there are really three different states of the relationship of a baal or an av to a netter. His active involvement in creating the netter, which is shayach to the idea of she'ela lechacha, possibly the active presence of his consciousness in being ma'akev the netter, which could be changed while there's still time in the day, where he hasn't lost his presence, and then a default situation where, since he has not engaged in the netter, the Torah now places the netter back in the hands of the person who made the netter, and then he has nothing to say. Amazing. So it's like a completely different way of looking at the sugya. So this is what I want to know. Well, says the Gemara Tashma, the Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Nishalim al Hakem, the Ein Nishalim al Hefer. It seems that Rabbi Yochanan had paskened that the halacha is clearly, and we're going to see more about this later on, and where we get it from, and why we're able to just bring a riot from it. I mean, it's only Rabbi Yochanan, but nonetheless, that he brings a riot later that you can have a she'ela on the hakama, and despite the fact that the Torah compares hakama and hafara, and seems to be saying that they would have the same halacha, we cannot use a hekesh unless a mechanism exists for the hekesh. And therefore, even though the Torah seems to be saying it would be possible to be shoyal on a heker, on the hafara, if we understand that the hafara is not an active involvement in being ma'akev the netter, it doesn't make any sense. What do you mean you could be shoyal on, can you be shoyal on a sports car? What do you mean? I don't know. The question is a ridiculous question. It's a ridiculous question on hafara also. How would you be shoyal on hafara? So if there's no such concept, the hekesh is going to create the concept. That would be the way of looking at it. Now, here is where we get into what I call the Pandora's box of, once we have an interest in the das of the baal, or the das of the father, now we already have to start considering the specific language and intent, because after all, it's going to be shayach to the she'ela to a chacham. So therefore, Rabbah wants to know a number of things. Suppose you repeat, kayim lechi, kayim lechi, this neder, very good. Yes, indeed, this neder, very good. So he repeats it. Now, again, fascinatingly, if you repeat a neder, or you repeat a shvua, so even if it wouldn't be chal, because ain shvua chal al shvua, what happens if you remove the prior shvua by going to a chacham and being shayal? Then the second shvua could kick in, because it's not as if you didn't say anything, it's just there's nowhere for it to be chal. It's like ain isr chal al isr. That doesn't mean that there's no point in the Isser. It just means it doesn't have any practical implications, because how does something become more Usser than it was? But if something happens to remove the original Isser, so then it's going to be Usser because of the second Isser. That's the question. Is that true over here, where a person repeats his Akoma? So he said, Kiyam lechi, kiyam lechi, and then he was shayal on the first hakama. What's the din? Well, Tashma, it seems to be exactly the same as the case that we had, and that was, Im nish'al ala rishona, shnia chala alav. So that if somebody had made two shavuos, we had before, shvua shelo ochal, shvua shelo ochal, if you were shoyal on the original shvua, then the second shvua is chal. In which case, the hakama should be the same thing. Since it's an active presence of involvement in creating the neder or the shvua, if you're shoyal on the first one, the original commitment that there should be this new hakama is still hanging there, crouching, so to speak, waiting to be chal, which was the way that the Ran approached it earlier. And here too, the second one will be chal on it. Now, here, says Rabbi, I have another rather complex question. Okay. Hold on for this, boys. This one is wild. Okay. So, boy, Rabbi, suppose the guy says, look, this is Mekuyam, and this is Mufar. And I want to make it very clear that this Hakoma should not take place unless the Hafora takes place. What? Help us, oh Lord. What is the guy trying to say? So, Mahu, what would be the din? Okay. Says the Ran once again in his fireside chat. Look, I've seen a lot of the people coming before me saying all kinds of pshatim in this. I don't like any of it. So I'm going to tell you what I think. And here's the way I read it. And then at the end he says, and this is great. So he very much likes this pshat. Okay. So here is how he sees a very straightforward presentation of a Gemara that seems to be absolutely wild. So this guy has made a series of statements, none of which really makes all that much sense. So he says, I want to be Mekayim this for you, but I'm being made for it for you. And the Hakama that I made should not be Chal unless the Hafara is Chal. So what is he trying to do? So the way the Ran understands it is that there was never any question in Rabbah's mind that absolutely the Hakama is for sure not meant to be Chal, as we'll see in a moment why. What he's trying to do essentially is he wants to put the fear of the Lord in this girl. So, okay, it is Mekuyam for you, but it's Mufar for you. Okay, so, oh no, what did he just do? I don't know what he just did, but now I'm nervous. So here's the thing. We know that it's impossible that the Hakama should be Chal, no matter how we understand what he said. Why? Because, look, since he went ahead and said, there's no way that they can both be Chal at the same time, obviously. They're contradictory situations. You can't be both Mekayim and Mefer. That's for sure. So therefore, whatever you're going to say, if you say that the Hafara was not Chal, so then by definition, neither was the Hakama, because you made a condition. The Hakama should not be Chal unless the Hafara was Chal. If you're going to tell me that, well, I said Kiyam Lechi and Mufar Lechi, so then if you're going to tell me that the Hakama was not Chal because you said Mufar, so then it wasn't Chal. And if you tell me the Hakama was Chal, then it would have prevented the Hafara to be Chal, and I made a condition that the Hakama can't be Chal unless the Hafara is Chal. So therefore, in keeping with an Escher-like issue, in which this is classic Gadol Escher Bach, right? In other words, I'm making a self-referential statement in which each part of it makes the other part into a lie. So, okay, so what do I do? So therefore, the given is there's no way for that comma to be Chal. If you say that he meant to say Hakoma and Hafora at one point, so then that comma isn't Chal. And if he didn't mean to say that, and he said first Kiyam Lechi, but he made it tonight that the Kiyam isn't Chal unless the Hafar is Chal. And if the Hafar is Chal, then by definition, the Hakama isn't Chal. So, there's no way that the Hakama is Chal. He's just trying to confuse her. So what is Rava's question? Rava's question is, now that we've distinguished between a default situation and a Hafara, I want to know whether this is a case of Hafara or this is a case of default. So in other words, if all of this is taking place on the same day, can the father actually say that he was made for the net? So here's my question. There are two ways of understanding what this person was trying to do by making this complex statement. We could look at it that for sure the Hakama isn't Chal, but the Hafara might have been Chal. Why? Because one way of understanding the two parts of the statement is that they were essentially saying the same thing, but in the inverse. In other words, if he first said the words kiyam lachi, and then he said mufar lachi, so that's mashma that he wants the hafara to be chal after the hakama, but there should be no hafara unless there was a hakama. Then he makes a beferish atnai that the same thing is true in the other direction. I don't want, well, I'm a little bit nervous, you know, because I did say it's mukam lach first, so maybe I messed things up, because maybe once I said that, there would be no way for me to do the hafara. So because of that, I go ahead and I make a condition, but I don't want that hakama to be there unless the hafara will be chal. So why didn't you say it the other way around also? If you meant them to be chal all at once, what did you only make it tonight that the hakama shouldn't be chal unless there's a hafara? You should have said that there shouldn't be a hafara unless there's a hakama. That's not a problem. He says, look, I made that very clear by first saying mukam lach, kiyam lach, and then saying mufar lach. But I'm nervous, because since I first said kiyam lach, then maybe that made hafara undoable, because I can't do hafara after hakama. So therefore, I want to make it very clear that I mean it just as much in the opposite way. So what am I really trying to do? I have no way of saying two things at once, because I only have one mouth. So I can't say kiyam mufar, mufar kiyam, kiyam mufar. Doesn't matter how fast you say it, you're always going to have to say one first, right? Okay, so he's really trying to figure out a way in which he could do both of them to really drive her nuts. And if that would be the case, so then there would be no hafara. Because if you're doing kiyam and hafara simultaneously, you're doing neither. So then the hafara, I don't know. I mean, wouldn't be chal. I don't know. So it's not clear what he's trying to say. That's one way of looking at it. So it's as if he made the tanai in both directions. A can't be chal without B. B can't be chal without A. And therefore, I am unable to assert that there should be a hafara. Or maybe that's not the way to understand his language. Maybe the fact that he said mufar lachi after kiyam lachi was not in order that the hafara should take place after the hakama already takes place. It's simply because he's really trying to say both together at that point. But what I really want to do is to be mefer. So that's why I say it's kiyam lach, and I want to be mefer that shvua in its entirety. So the only thing that he wants to make sure about is the thing that he said the tanai on. And that was there should be no hakama unless the hafara is chal. So therefore, his main concern is that the hafara should be chal, not that the hakama should be chal. That's why he only made an absolutely clear condition that there shall be no hakama unless the hafara is chal. So basically, what he really wants to do is hafara. And he's nervous that the way he said it might have meant that the hafara won't be chal, and therefore he wants to make it very clear, listen, don't even think about that hakama stuff, because the main purpose of this statement is that I want it to be mufar. So if in any way my mention of a hakama messes up my hafara, I'm making this condition to make it very clear anything I said about a hakama has to be understood in light of the ability for the hafara to be chal, because that's my real concern. Okay, so then in that event, he does want the hafara, and he does not want the hakama. So how do we look at it? Do we look at it that he's attempting to do two things at once, which are contradictory, and therefore there's neither hafara nor hakama? Or do we understand that he's being megala his real das by making the neder, by making the hafara an absolute, and the hakama dependent on the hafara? Okay, so we're trying to figure out What do we do when a person says something that cannot be said at once, but could be taken to mean I'm trying to do two contradictory things? Now, says the Gemara, well, we actually have a Mishnah that talks about exactly that situation. Now, the truth is, the Mishnah does not talk exactly about this situation. But by analyzing the differences between what the Mishnah there does talk about in Torah, which we've discussed many times, actually, and what the situation is here, we're going to be able to figure out what the din will be in Rabba's case. So the case over there is, a guy is trying to make a tumura, and he makes it as a tumurat ola and a tumurat shlamim. Now, can it be a both a tumurat ola and a tumurat shlamim? Well, yes, in a sense. If he was able to make certain that, and he makes it very clear, I want this thing to be two contradictory things, a tumurat ola and a tumurat shlamim, and he says that, fairish. In that event, it would be both. How can it be both? Very simple. We have over here a mixture of the value of the carbon as being partially for an oil, partially for a shlamim. And that means that we wait till it gets a mum, we sell it, and we use half of the money towards a carbon oil and half of the money towards a carbon shlamim, because that's obviously what he was trying to say. It certainly cannot be a mixed oil shlamim. Okay. But what if he doesn't say, I mean exactly what I'm trying to say, I'm trying to do two things at once? Okay, so that's what happened over here. We don't know what he means. He said, Tumurat Ola, Tumurat Shlamim. So we have a Machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Meir, remember we have the Klal. We look at the first thing that the person says. Once that is Chal, it became a Tumurat Ola. You can't turn it into a Tumurat Shlamim anymore. Your opportunity is lost. Rabbi Yossi says, well, we ask him, what did you want to do? Because im lekach nitkaveh mitchila, I mean, if that's what he's trying to do, what do you expect the poor guy to say? He only has one mouth, and he couldn't figure out how to say tumurat ola shlamim. And so you'll say, well, I mean, so what did he have to repeat tumurat? He could have just said, this is a tumurat ola plus shlamim. Remember, why does he say tumurat ola tumurat shlamim? No, that's just because the guy was nervous that if he didn't say the word tumura up against what he wanted the tumura to be, that it wouldn't work. That's no proof of anything to me, says Rabbi Yossi. So the extra word tumurat shlamim, I don't think that that's actually relevant. And therefore, if the guy says, no, that's what I wanted. I wanted it to be both. So ho'il v'yev shalik rochnei shemot ke'echad dvarav kayamim. Look. If this is what he wants, and he can't figure out how to say two contradictory things simultaneously, so then we say it for him. And we will, in fact, wait till it gets a mum, sell it, use half of the proceeds for an oil and half of the proceeds for a shlomi. And now you'll say, okay, but that's only a libra Rabbi Yossi. No. Because note that Rabbi Meir only insisted in that case, afilo Rabbi Meir lo amar ela, Rabbi Meir wasn't talking over there about a case like ours. In our case, the guy made a condition that A shouldn't be absolutely take place unless B took place. So he made it very clear that he was making them interdependent. Rabbi Meir was only saying, look, if the guy was saying two contradictory things, we'll take the first thing. But Rabbi Meir would agree if he said, and I want to make it very clear, I am making condition that it can't be in a Tumura Sayla unless it's a Tumura Shlomi. Okay, so then, I mean, that's not the case Rabbi Meir was discussing. In that case, Rabbi Meir would agree to Rabbi Yossi. Look, obviously, if he said, Lo techol zel, ela imken cholazu, I'd agree with Rabbi Yossi. So therefore, in this case, where that's exactly what the guy did say, he said, Lo techol hakama, Ela imken chala ha'afara. So then even Rabbi Meir would be made that the hafara is definitely chal. So therefore, the machlokas in this Mishnah bears a certain resemblance to our case, out of which we can come to the conclusion of what is the person's language. How do we analyze and parse his statements? So the first that we have over there, Tumura Sayla, Tumura Shlamim, let's just make it very clear that In the Gemara over there, it says, everybody would be meida that if he said it as a clear-cut indication of I want A and then B, so then we would, even Reb Yossi would be meida that we only do A, obviously, right? There, we go according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir Shita, as Gavi will tell you, is Rabbi Meir holds Tfos Lashon Rishon. Always take the first part of the statement, unless there's something there that tells you not to. Because Rabbi Yossi is also moda that there's no way, if first it became a Tumuras Ola, there's absolutely no way for it to become subsequently a Tumuras Shlomi. Because certainly once the Kedushas Chal, it's no longer in his hand. Now, if he would have said, Lo tachol ze ela im ken chal tazu, which is the case that we have over here. So then, it's possible that the guy wanted the two things to be chal simultaneously. But that's because they can be chal simultaneously. In what sense? In the sense that we could have a Kedushas Domim, and we could sell it and utilize the money half for one and half for the other. So in that case, everybody would agree, well, of course, that's what the guy wants. It makes sense. There's nothing about his statement that reduces it to nonsense. But where is the machlokas? The machlokas was specifically in the case where he said, Tumurat Ola, Tumurat Shlamim. So Rabbi Meir says, look, he should have said, Tumurat Ola plus Shlamim, right? Why did he repeat that word? Tumurat Ola, Tumurat Shlamim. So that's the equivalent of saying, first I want it to be a Tumurat Ola, then I, shut up, says Rabbi Meir. You just finished your statement. You said you want it to be a Tumurat Ola. I don't give a hang what you want from this point forward. We always tfos, we grab the first thing that you said. Now you're out of the picture. It's none of your business at this point what else you'd like to make it. It became a Tumurat Ola, and now you're out of the picture. That's where the machlokas is. So according to Rabbi Meir, the very fact that you finish the statement Tumurat Ola, and now you open up your mouth and you start saying Tumura, that's when we tell you, shut up, the Tumura's finished. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, holds that in that case, maybe the only reason that he seems to be trying to make a second statement of a Tumura, which I agree is ridiculous, but I don't think that that's what he's trying to do. I think the guy made a reasonable error. He's trying to make certain that it's both a Tumura Sola and a Tumura Shlamim, and therefore he wants the word Tumura to be equally applicable to his first part of the statement as it is to the latter part of the statement. So he repeats the word Tumura again to make sure we understand. When I say I want it to be a Tumurat Ola and Shlamim, he's thinking, well, what does that mean? Am I trying to make it a carbon Shlamim or am I trying to make it a Tumura Shlamim? So he repeats the word Tumura. What's so crazy about that? And since that's what he could mean, so therefore we ask him, what did you want? And if the guy said, well, I didn't know how to say it any better, I wanted it to be both a Tumura of an Ola and Shlamim, so then we do. We make it both a Tumura of an Ola and a Shlamim because that is a reasonable possibility and we wait till it gets a mum and we sell it. And there's no way for me to say two things at once. So therefore, what do we see from there? We see that the machlokas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi would only be in a case where you say two opposite things, and if one of them would be chal, then the other one couldn't be chal. But the thing is that if you can't say both of them together, what would be the halacha? Which is basically what it was that Rava was asking over here. So therefore, the Gemara says, look, according to Rabbi Yossi, 100%, we understand that when he said mufer lechi, after he said kiyam lechi, he did not mean for it to be chal after hakama, which would have meant that it is not chal. You can't have hafara after hakama, just like you can't have a tumurah shlamim after a tumurah seila. And Rabbi Yossi says, in that case, we don't believe that what he wanted to do is first, the first part of the statement, and then the second part of the statement. That is not how we interpret him. Same thing would be true over here. If you said, kiyam lechi, mufer lechi, we don't believe that what you want to do is first to do a kiyam and then afara, because that's impossible. You cannot be mefer once you were making. And therefore, since what he did say was clearly indicative of his being makbid on the hafara, then that would be true over here for sure. Because in this case, there would be nothing to ask. So according to Rabbi Yossi, 100%. If he said mufer lechi, it never meant that he was saying it should only be mufer if there was a hakama. That's not what it means. And therefore, that possibility that Rabbi was raising is crossed out, according to Rabbi Yossi. Now, you'll say, if that's the case, so then we're going to see. You know what? I won't even get into that because we didn't get to that yet. When we get there, we'll go back and we'll ask that question. Fine. Now let's move on to Rabbi Meir. So according to Rabbi Meir, you would think that it would mean that there is no hafara. No, not true. Because even according to Rabbi Meir, it's also clear because despite the fact that in that case, he says that only the Tumuras Eila would be chal, and he said the Tumuras Shlomim afterwards, and therefore the Tumuras Shlomim isn't chal at all. In this case, it's very, very different because, as the Gemara points out, he never said over there one should be not chal without the other. So since over here he said beferish, I don't want any hakama unless there is a hafara. So that means that even according to Rabbi Meir, he made it absolutely clear that what he really wants is the hafara. And he doesn't care about the hakama. I mean, he'd like to scare her with hakama, but only on condition that it's not going to mess up his hafara, which is his ikar intent. And therefore, Rabbi Meir would also agree that in this case, since he did say lo techol zeh, ela im kein chal zeh, so therefore, even Rabbi Meir is made. Fine. Now, look, there's a little bit of a confusing piece over here. We interjected that the machlokas had to do with the repetitive use of the word tumura. Tumurat ola, tumurat shlamim. Isn't that in and of itself a very important issue that we need to understand? How does the lack of the raya of the extra word tumurat change the lashon of Rabbi Meir? In other words, Rabbi Meir's entire argument was based on why did you say tumurat twice? That has no equivalent here. So we could have made that the reason why Rabbi Meir is not arguing in our case with Rabbi Yossi. What's the equivalent to tumurat shlamim in the case over here where you said very clearly, kiyam lach, mufer lach. There's no extra word. Man, oh man, it's getting bigger and bigger, that scary face. Unbelievable. I prefer the one beneath you. So why didn't we actually point that out? I mean, it seems to be a major breakdown in our comparison to the Raya, in our sugya, to the comparison to the Mishnah in Tumura. So in this case, I don't have that extra word. And we just leave out the whole discussion. And that's very, very confusing. So the Ran asks this question. Why don't we make that centerpiece of our argument? Seems to be a very good question. Says the Ran, it's not a question at all. Because over there, there's a possibility that something can be both a tumurat ola and a tumurat shlomim, as we said. So if it wouldn't have been for that extra language, there it's true that Rabbi Meir would have said, well, it makes a great deal of sense. He wants it to be half of its value a tumurat ola, so we'll wait till it gets a mum. The other half of its value to be a tumurat shlomim, so we'll wait till it gets a mum. And then we're going to split the value. That's why Rabbi Meir had to argue in the Mishnah that the extra word tumura means, but it doesn't seem that that's what he wants, because he could have just said tumura ola plus shlomim. And therefore, I need to point out why that's not true, because it's possible for both of them to be true. Okay, but that's only over there that it's possible for both of them to be true, when therefore it's the extra lashon of tumura that makes all the difference in the world. But over here, there is no possibility of a hakama and a hafara to be simultaneously effective. obviously. They're contradictory terms. And therefore, without the extra word, tmura, I'm still left with the same situation of understanding that without an extra tmura, I would for sure, according to Rebbe Meir, not have assumed that a person is saying two contradictory things and he means them to be chal at once and not one after the other. I disagree. He's trying to make them chal one after the other, says Rebbe Meir, and therefore, b'tchilas dvarav adam nidon, as Gavi already told us. So that would mean that in this case, he would say that there is only hakama. But, as the Gemara explains, you forgot a very important thing. He said beferish with a tanai, there shall be no hakama without a hafara being there. So then there isn't a hakama. Okay, so then that means that even Rebbe Meir cannot post his argument in Tmura in this case. So now if we're coming to parse, look, I understand this is very schleppy, guys, but it's the whole idea of Nedarim. Remember, the whole idea of Nedarim is an analysis of human intentions. And now we're extending that analysis not only to the wording of the Neder, and not only to the tvisa of the neder, and not only to the focus of the object of the neder, and not only to the time that you defined for the neder, all of which were up in the air depending on the parsing of language. We're extending it even to the ideas of afar and hakama, because now we understand that the father is intimately, or the husband is intimately involved, and therefore the same issues of language pertain to the issues of afar and hakama. That's why we need to go further into this. And since, remember, the makor of the elements of human language being capable of affecting isurim, where is that? That's in kachim and tmura. So this is exactly where we have Rava's question. And it's why we know exactly where to look to the machlokas in tmura sayla, tmura shlamim, which is the basis, remember, of the whole idea of where Nidre Yisr come from the fact that Nidre Yisr include Nidre Hegdash back all the way from the beginning, and that it is not really two completely unrelated sugyas the way people like to pretend, which is why, of course, we have the Shita of the Rush, that you can only make a Neder if you use the concept of Korban, and otherwise it's just Yodais Nedarim, which is the equivalent of saying that it should be the same as Kodesh. And this explained the entire relationship of Yesh, Mi'ila, Bekainamais, and so on that we saw before, which is also Magei Rebbe Meir Shita. So gentlemen, do not lose heart. On the contrary, become more like Shakespeare every day so that you can understand the different levels of the subconscious expressions of a person where he's trying to do things and his heart is ambivalent, as so often happens in human affairs. And that ambivalence is only expressed in a close appreciation of his language. What does this guy really want? Does he know what he really wants? That's the problem. And so the place to look for it again is to go back to the Mekor, which is the Inyan of Kachim itself. Fine. So now we understand that we see in Kachim that everybody agrees in such a case, then it would be the Hafara that's important. And concludes the Ran to general applause, Kain Nira Li Pirusha Deshmaitza, and I can tell you, man, this is so straight and good, it's the only way to look at life. Pirusha Tirutza Uma Alyahi. So, okay, if you enjoyed that, then you can add your applause to the run. Continues the driving you guys nuts. Okay. So we have, therefore, in this case, both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir agree. Boy Rabba, how about if you say Beferish? It's Kiem Umufer Bevatachat. How about that? Hey, you never thought of that one, did you? We only talked about ambivalence. This guy is so ambivalent, he's ambivalent about his own ambivalence. So now he says, I want you to be both mukam and mufer simultaneously. So what is the din over there? I mean, where you've got a catch-22 situation, not because he manufactured it by saying, like he did in the first case, so complicatedly, that A can't be chal unless B is chal, and B can't be chal unless A is chal. We understand that we're running around in circles, which would do Hofstadter credit. We're talking about a question over here where the guy says, Beferish, I want two contradictory things to take place. So what is the rule in such a case? Is there any impact of the statement at all? Well, Tashma, the Yomar Rabba, and this is another very important Gavi statement, kol, take out the word davar, kol she'eno bezeh achar zeh, afilu bebat achat eno. If you wouldn't be able to do something in the order of A followed by B, or in the order of B followed by A, which is the case over here, once I do a hakama, I can't do a hafara, and once I do a hafara, I cannot do a hakama, then the rule is that it cannot be done as A plus B either. So in any circumstances like these, we would have to simply say his statement is nonsense. And therefore, it does not have any impact whatsoever, not as if he already did Hakama and now he can't be Shoyal on it, and now he can be Shoyal on it. He didn't do Hakama. He already did Hafara. No, he didn't do Hafara. He did nothing. Now tell us what you want. Now, the question, now that we've gotten to this particular point, I mean, the question is, why didn't we raise that issue before? Because, I mean, this didn't seem to have occurred to us when we were talking about the Mishnah, about Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. We tried to figure out Raya even according to Rabbi Meir. But the question is, I mean, if we understood his statement originally as saying that he wants both of them to be chal together, so, I mean, wouldn't that impinge on this question? And that the Ron asked before. Why don't we say that according what we just had, that kosh eino bezach rezeh afilu bevatach eino, so we should say in the same case over here, how could we be talking about a hafara and a hakama if you couldn't do both of these things at the same time? And that, says the Ron, is because of the fact that he made the Tanai. The Tanai makes it that one is not going to get in the way of the other. So you're 100% right. If it hadn't been for the Tanai, and he had just said, like he said over here, I want them both chal, you're right. The entire statement would have fallen apart, and there would have been no further discussion as to whether there was either hakama or hafara. However, in this case, since he said beferish, there cannot be B unless there is A. So then he's saying, I do not want that contradiction to ever be raised. Because in the event that you've got a problem with the contradictory effects of the statement, then cancel part of it. And I'm telling you which part to cancel. So that's why it is not relevant to the case that we raised. The only part that is relevant is how to parse his words. Did he actually mean to go in both directions, in which case there was nothing that was chal? Or do we understand that his intent was really primarily to affect a hafara, and he just wanted to put the fear of the Lord in this person that he's being made for, so that she would never figure out what he's trying to say?